within the tech world and the entrepreneurship world, so often we just hear the stories of success, right? And you don't often hear what happens behind the scenes. Like many entrepreneurs, we were just overly optimistic that we thought things were going to work. I think a lot of people say, like, if you knew how hard it was going to be, a lot of people like wouldn't do it.
Welcome to The Moment, a new podcast by Canadian Business and Quill Podcasting. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Maganoy, the publisher of Canadian Business, and I'm co-hosting this podcast with Fatima Zaidi, the CEO and founder of Quill.
We're talking about the not-so-glamorous side of startup life, the moments we don't always get to hear about, the time when founders had to make a sharp pivot, start over from square one, or ditch an idea entirely. These are the real stories of what it takes to make it as an entrepreneur.
Each week, we're welcoming a new entrepreneur to talk about that moment where they were faced with giving up or powering through.
Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts.
Today, we're speaking with Eva Wong, COO and co-founder of Borrowell, a Canadian fintech company. I first came across Eva's story in 2022 when we featured her in Canadian Business Magazine, naming her one of the top 10 entrepreneurs of the year in our annual How I Made It package. In this series, we asked founders exactly that, how they build their businesses from the ground up. The following year, Borrowell applied for Canadian Business's inaugural Innovation Awards. A panel of internal and external judges reviewed all the applicants and was unanimously impressed by Borrowell's mission to help more Canadians achieve financial freedom, particularly newcomers who must rebuild their credit from scratch upon arriving in the country.
Eva launched Borrowell with co-founder Andrew Graham in 2014. In 2015, they launched their first product, an online personal loan, and were one of the first companies in 2016 to start offering free credit scores to Canadians. Borrowell offers a range of financial tools, and they also use AI to provide personal financial product recommendations. They've expanded their team from 5 in the early startup days to now over 100 across Canada. In total, the company has brought in $50 million in external funding, and with 3 million customers, they are now one of Canada's largest fintech companies.
Welcome to the podcast, Eva. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
It's so great to have you here. I still can't believe that we've never met. Toronto is the biggest small town and somehow our paths have never crossed.
But I know.
We were waiting for this occasion.
That's great. I'm glad to be here.
I want to start off with asking you a question that is, I think, very core to our entire podcast, which is the moment in your business where you felt like there was an inflection point. I know in the early days of Borrowell, and congratulations for all the success you've had, there was a moment where things weren't going according to plan. I think you launched your first product, which is the online personal loan. And again, things weren't going according to plan and things were not on script or turning out the way that you had hoped.
Let's talk
about that moment because I think it's so important for aspiring entrepreneurs to understand that it's not easy. And if it was easy, everyone would do it. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
100%.
So I want to hear the good, bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for the question, because I do think that within the tech world and the entrepreneurship world, so often we just hear the stories of success, right? And you don't often hear what happens behind the scenes.
Totally.
And I know lots of founders, and I know that for every story that's out there that's super positive, there's at least 10 stories in the background of things that didn't go according to plan.
Yeah.
You're right. We launched our first product. It was an online personal loan. And I still remember we put it out into the wild and we started getting applications in. And the whole point of this was that we could automatically adjudicate, which is that you would come in, fill in this form, and we would automatically tell people whether they were approved or not, what the loan amount would be, what their interest rate and monthly payment were. The problem was we were literally rejecting every single application that came in. So we were paying money.
Oh no.
Good money for advertising to bring people in. And then when they applied, we actually had to pull a credit file on them. So we were going to the credit bureau, paying money to pull their credit data. And in the end, disappointing the customer and not even getting anything for it. So it just sort of felt like we were pouring money down the toilet and not getting anything for it.
So how did that make you feel like in the moment? Was there ever a point where you felt like you can't continue? And I'm in the thick of it as a founder, like you continued going and I love my job, but I would say it's so hard. What sort of motivated you to keep going? And like, where was the light at the end of the tunnel?
But I think what's hard to know is like, is this what it's supposed to be like, or is it supposed to be better? And so as a team, there were sort of two camps. One camp was, we do have some people who are going through and getting approved and taking the loan. And so we just need to go and find more people like the people that we already have. And so that's sort of like it's a marketing problem. You just need to go and find more people like we've had. The other camp was really, no, the product is wrong. Like we're being too tight in the underwriting. We're being too risk averse. You know, the interest rates are too high, so people aren't taking it, or we're being too strict on who we're approving. So, I mean, this is the classic product market fit.
Yeah.
On the one side, it's like, oh no, the product's a problem. The other side, it's like the market that's a problem. So I think that was probably the hardest thing actually, is that like, there's a lot of tension on the team. And I think that often, it's not just like an academic exercise that it's like in your own head.
Right.
There's like real existential threat to the company, and we don't agree on what the problem is. I think that's the kind of thing that maybe people don't see behind the scenes. It's super emotional.
Well, you figured it out, so congrats.
And I'm curious, did you realize right away the gravity of the problem, or was it more in hindsight that you can see, whoa, this almost brought us down?
Do you know what? I think maybe, like many entrepreneurs, we were just overly optimistic that we thought things were going to work. I think a lot of people say, like, if you knew how hard it was going to be, a lot of people like wouldn't do it. And so, yeah, I think maybe we just weren't realistic in our expectations. That was probably the first thing. The other thing I think we didn't quite realize is we sort of thought it would be good out of the gate. And it wasn't good out of the gate. And that's also fun. I think that's also very normal. Both were right. Like neither the product was right or the market was right. There were like things that we need to do on both. And so we probably just like wasted a bunch of time instead of like solving the problem and going at it and testing. We fell maybe too in love with the product instead of the problem.
So if you knew then what you know now, would you still do it? Would you still be an entrepreneur?
Knowing what I know now, I would still do it 100%.
Okay, well, that's good. That's a good data point for me. Like, do I keep going on my hardest days? Eva told me it's not even one of those things where it's like it continues to get better. You just have to get comfortable with the discomfort.
I think that's it, actually. And I would say that I don't think it's worth it in the end is actually what should drive it. I think you actually have to find some joy or some sort of purpose in the everyday, because like there isn't necessarily an end, or there isn't an end that you feel good about. I think in the early stages, I was always like, okay, once we hit X milestone, once we get like $1 million in sales, once we get like 25 employees, or you know, eventually once we IPO, then I'll feel like I'm successful and that will make it worth it. But at every one of those milestones, there's still bigger problems.
Your challenges keep growing and changing.
Right. And so I do think that you have to find joy and purpose in the journey. And if you're not enjoying it, you really aren't enjoying, you know, any part of it, then I think you have to ask yourself whether this is worth it, because I think it is about the journey. It can't just be about the destination.
Fatima, you made a good point about the challenges that just keep getting bigger. I always think about that in life generally. It's problems get bigger and they occupy a lot of different areas of your life. And hopefully you grow as a person and get more resilient, which helps you because you have to deal with even more as things progress. Do you find that's what it's like running a business as well?
Yeah, for sure. Where the problems are different, but and maybe it's like similar to parenting too. I've got two kids, they're 13 and 10. And the early days are like super physical and intense. And I do think the problems are bigger now, but I sort of like the problems more. The problems are different, but it does feel less existential. I think in the early days, it's like, oh my goodness, like, am I going to be able to keep this baby alive? And it's the same with the business, right? It's like, oh, you're like super worried that if this one thing doesn't go right, it means the business is a failure. And there definitely is more stability now. The problems are bigger, but it feels less existential.
That's good to hear. I feel like I'm like very much in the thick of it. It's 4 years in and we're about 20 full-time staff. We're past the inflection point. It's like the non-risk zone,
right?
But the challenges never go away. So every day I try to remind myself, just like get comfortable with the discomfort. It's a marathon.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear. I mean, it's good feedback for sure. I want to come back to an earlier comment you made about there being a lot of tension in the early days on your team before finding product market fit. You started this company with Andrew Graham. How do you and Andrew sort of manage like the decision-making process? And, you know, are you often, you know, butting heads? Like, how do you navigate? Do you have your own lanes? I'm curious how that typically works. And I often think about when I start my next business, could I do it with a co-founder or am I too now set in my ways?
Right. Yeah, I think there's definitely pros and cons. I know lots of solo founders and lots of people who have co-founders. I would find it very difficult to do on my own because I think, again, I mentioned this whole journey being very emotional. So I really appreciate the co-founder dynamic. And I mean, Andrew and I think in some ways we're very similar. In other ways, we are different. I'm actually trying to come up with a time when we like vehemently disagreed on something. I think for the most part, we did have our own lanes. And so if it was something that was sort of within my purview, he would be like, okay, well, I don't necessarily agree with that, but it's your decision. And then if there was anything that was like company, you know, like overall to do with the company, he's the CEO. So it would be like the buck stops with him. So, but
that's great. That's great that you have that sort of understanding amongst you too. I see a lot of co-CEO situations where it's like, you can't always agree on everything. So how do you sort of come to a resolution?
That's right.
I'm actually really excited about this question because I feel like I share a very similar background to you. I was also born to immigrant parents, and I am really curious to know how they sort of shaped your drive and impacted your career in the early days.
My parents are also immigrants from Hong Kong. They didn't come from a lot. They worked really hard in mostly like blue collar jobs. And so they definitely set a standard of, you know, like hard work was really important. Education was really important. You know, doing your best was really important. And I don't know if you had a similar childhood, but I was also enrolled in so many extracurricular activities. Do you know what I mean? It was like roller skating, ice skating, piano lessons, Chinese school. So there was a lot, but I never felt like they put a ton of pressure on me. But well, the one thing I would say is that I really wasn't exposed to entrepreneurship. I think because, you know, I took student loans to go to university. I was very much focused on getting a job, paying off my loans. Security was really important to me. And being an entrepreneur, I just didn't have examples of that in the early days. And so I do think that that was something that maybe I had to overcome or never really saw myself as pursuing an entrepreneurial path.
So Borrowell isn't your first startup. I understand you and Andrew actually worked together on another startup before that, Toronto Homecoming. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, happy to. I would still consider Borrowell our first startup. Toronto Homecoming was a not-for-profit that we did off the sides of our desks while we had full-time jobs. But for us, it was like a really safe way of trying entrepreneurship. So I am super thankful for it. Essentially, we both had the experience of leaving Canada and coming back and finding it more challenging than we thought it should be to connect and find jobs, like great jobs in Toronto. And what we realized is that in Toronto, it's a very networked sort of job search. You really have to know someone, especially if you're sort of coming with international experience from companies or universities that people here might not recognize.
Oh yeah, they won't.
Sort of need an intro.
The foreign experience is very discredited here. I think it's actually, we have a lot of work to do in that department because people here who are very qualified are like in the service space, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just like their skills could actually be utilized here.
Yeah, and we were tackling people who for the most part were Canadian, often had gone to Canadian universities, and then decided to pursue graduate work in the US or the UK, had worked there for 10 years. And then we're like, oh, I do want to come back to Canada. I want to contribute here. My family's here. I want my kids to go to summer camp or play hockey or whatever it was. But they were finding it really hard to find those connections. And so we organized an annual conference where we invited a vetted group of people who we knew were going to be high performing. And then we had all these corporate sponsorships from the banks, the telcos, and different startups who were interested in hiring people who had global experience.
Do you think it's gotten any easier for folks to network in those interim years?
Yeah, I do think that it's easier to do a global job search now. I think, you know, this was back in, I think 2010 or 2011, where like LinkedIn wasn't as big as it is now. And I think now with remote work, like people are very open to hiring people who've got different experiences, at least in tech or, you know, maybe like more white collar jobs. Yeah.
Which is a good thing. You want to get the best talent you can. From anywhere.
I think I read somewhere that you started Borrowell when you were on maternity leave. Yeah, like, is that accurate?
Yeah. So I was towards the end of my maternity leave. I had a one-year-old and then my daughter was one and my son was four. So it was definitely a hectic time. Although I would say that because I was on maternity leave leading into this, coming into the office was like a revelation. I was so happy at work, but I actually think it was like really great to have kids. And most of the co-founding team also did have kids. So we were very focused in the office. And then we would all go home at 5 o'clock and decompress and have time with our kids, eat dinner. And then we would often get back online in the evening. But it was actually really good to have that forcing mechanism and to bring a bit of perspective. Because I think without that, you just have to be super disciplined to not make work 100% of your life. And I think having kids who are super demanding of your time and your attention was actually like a really helpful break to be like, oh yeah, life is more than the business.
Oh, 100%.
There's like a whole life outside.
And I feel like in the hiring space for me, like the hiring hack is hiring moms because they know how to prioritize. Yeah. Like the moms are my favorite because they know how to do their job well between the hours of 9 to 5 because that's all that's given to them.
Right.
So I'm curious, you know, you've obviously raised $50 million in external funding. Did you feel the fact that you were a mom and had kids and a whole life outside of your work that you were at a disadvantage, or were you ever made to feel like you were at a disadvantage?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's like hard to know because I don't really have a counterfactual. Do you know what I mean? Like this was just my experience. I never tried to hide it. And I know some women do feel like they need to hide that. I guess I just always felt like as a leader within the company, I wanted people to be able to bring their whole selves into work. And so I did have pictures of my kids up at my desk. But I do remember there being a situation where someone asked, they're like, oh, Eva, like you're out all the time. Your family must like never see you. I never really like thought about it that much. But literally one of my coworkers was passing by this woman and she's like, would you have asked that of a man? Sorry. And so... Yeah. So again, like I didn't really think anything of it. I was like, no, I'm not out that much. People just like post a lot on LinkedIn. And
it is a bit of a strange question though, because you're right. I never stopped to think about it, but nobody would really ask a man that. And it's interesting because my husband is like very much the domesticated one. He's the one who cooks all the meals. He does all the cleaning. He also has a job.
Yeah.
But everyone's always like, oh, you're so lucky. You know, you're so lucky. You must be so thankful for him. And I'm like, no, women have been doing this for generations. Yeah. Like, of course, the person who has a more demanding job and has less time to give, it's like relationships are a compromise. But I think it's just that we don't get enough credit for doing that for generations and the same expectations don't really translate.
Yeah. And so, and there was this sort of like expectation that if I was out, it meant I, you know, maybe underlying that I wasn't being a good parent, right?
Constant guilt.
Yeah. Which I never actually felt. Like, it was like one of those things where it's like, I make my choices. And if I choose to be out, I should just enjoy being out or I should make a different choice. And so I tried to be pretty academic about that. It's like, if I feel like I should spend more time with my family, then I should just make that choice and do it. But yeah, to me, actually, I don't mind the question because I do think, especially from other women, it comes from a real place of like trying to figure life out.
I also predict that your children will get a very strong sense of purpose and work ethic by watching you as an entrepreneur. I mean, I have a few friends who had really busy moms and, you know, they were busy executives at large companies or entrepreneurs and they weren't resentful that their moms were, you know, at board meetings or had to miss a few soccer practices. They were like, no, the drive and the work ethic and the quality of life that we have is because of this parent and like that should be celebrated. So I think that this constant guilt of, you know, am I not giving my children enough time as like a mom? Should I be more present? It's like you do the best that you can with what you have.
Yeah. One of the things I did in the early days, and I'd read this sort of like time management productivity book. And one of the exercises the author recommends doing is for a couple of weeks, just like map out how you spend your time. And I thought it was like super interesting because at the end of it, what I realized is like, you know, in the morning, I'd spend an hour with my kids. At the end of the day, I'd spend a couple hours with my kids. And then mostly all weekend was like spent with the kids. And when you add that up, it's 40 hours a week.
And that's hands-on active time too. That's not sitting at a desk.
And so for me, that was actually really comfortable. It's like to go to the data. I spend a full-time job equivalent number of hours with my kids. So I don't need to feel guilty.
No, 100%. And the argument would be made like, are you making time for yourself?
Right.
Which I suppose is a sacrifice when you choose to be a parent. It's like something's got to give. But I think honestly, I think it's incredible. And your perspective is really refreshing that you're like, it's not personal, but like it is what it is. And I'm not going to sit here and be apologetic or feel guilty. Like I'm doing the best that I can and I'm actually doing a really good job. So
let's go back to fundraising. You've obviously been able to raise quite a bit for Barwell over the years, over $50 million in capital. Do you have any advice for other founders who are looking to raise?
My co-founder, our business partner, Andrew, did lead most of the fundraising. We have a great CFO as well, Jeff Yim. And so I was involved for sure. What I would say about fundraising is that it is really hard. It doesn't matter. It's like you talk to anyone and maybe like the top 0.01% find it super, super easy. But the majority of people do find it really hard just because there is a huge sort of, you know, network of potential investors. They all have their areas of specialty. some don't do fintech, some don't do B2C, they only do B2B, some are in fintech, but they only do blockchain. Some might be exactly in your sweet spot, but they invested in a company that was very similar to ours a year ago, so they don't want to add that to their portfolio. So it is like super complicated. It is like finding a needle in a haystack of finding the right partner that's excited about your vision. And so I guess that's like one thing I would say off the top is that it is really hard.
And did you find it harder as a Canadian startup in that space?
I think so. And one of the main reasons is because we have a Canadian-only business. So I think that was sort of like another hurdle for people to get over. We had to explain the Canadian market. So I think that was just like another challenge to overcome.
So I'm going to ask you a question that Guy Raz asks every single one of his entrepreneurs on his show, How I Built This. Why do you think Borrowell has been successful? Like, what would you attribute that to?
Well, I do think that luck is part of it. And I think anyone who says that it was like 100% based on like their effort and their decisions is pretty delusional. There's a ton of things that we couldn't have foreseen or couldn't have chosen. So for sure, I think like whether you want to call it luck or providence or whatever it is, there definitely is an element of that to any business success. So I think that's one. Maybe the other is Andrew and I were always like very focused on staying alive. And so I think that always just has to be there. And you have to be in some cases super pragmatic around like, what do you need to do for the business to keep on surviving? And I think like even in the sort of like darkest moments of, you know, like something falling through that we'd been counting on or getting bad news or whatever it was like, okay, let's take a moment. And then like, what do we need to do to fix this?
Have you ever had to go through like a round of layoffs or?
Yeah, we've done multiple.
Okay. So you've definitely had seen the dark days.
Yeah. We had a funding round fall through at the 99th hour. But I do think that you sort of look back and like, okay, well, we went through something really hard before, right? You sort of build that muscle.
So in case anyone's curious, I actually was keeping count of all the entrepreneurs on How I Built This who attribute a large portion of their success to being in the right place at the right time. 90% of the founders have attributed their success to luck, being in the right place at the right time, that there is a variable that they cannot control. And because I think it's important for entrepreneurs to understand that hard work and doing your best and momentum and continuing to keep going, that's like the bare minimum.
You know, flounder or fail, ultimately, it's not necessarily that you did anything wrong. It just comes down to timing, right place, right time, and other factors you can't control. It's a risk-reward thing. Okay, so now we're on to a segment that we call the Founders Toolbox, where we're distilling all the lessons that entrepreneurs have told us about. So we're going to distill all of those things. So what are the resources that they really leaned on to keep going in the tough times? So Eva, is there a specific thing or things that are your go-to tools in your Founders Toolbox?
One of the things that was really important, especially in the early days, was having what we called a Founders Forum. And so it was a group of peers, all other founders who were in businesses that were similar, but not competitive. And honestly, it's like group therapy, essentially, where it was highly confidential, highly trusted, and people who we'd been in relationship with as we sort of, you know, started and kept going over a number of years, where there is a high level of like trust in each other. And I do think that during the hard times, it was good to have, you know, this group of people that we could go to and share what was happening. And actually, a lot of times hear that they had all gone through something very similar. So I think in a lot of ways, it wasn't necessarily that I got solutions out of it. It just sort of normalized that, oh yeah, we went through this and we came out of it. And, you know, it's like, yeah, this is like totally normal. Whereas you sort of think something is like, oh my goodness, I'm so ashamed. I'm like, I can't share this. And then it comes out and everyone's like, oh yeah, we did that. That happened.
So our next segment is us wanting to get to know the real Eva. So we call it the rapid fire round. I'm sure you've seen Vogue 70 questions.
Yes.
Short answers, quick answers, no time to think.
All right.
Whatever comes to mind, we want to know who you are and what inspires you.
I'm ready.
Let's do this. What's your favorite time of the day?
If I wake up early, first thing in the morning when it's quiet.
What's one vice you wish you could give up?
Binge watching or binge reading late into the night and not getting enough sleep.
How many hours of sleep do you get?
Normally 7 to 8.
What's one thing people don't know about you?
I can be a very good procrastinator if there's something I don't want to do.
As a founder, wow. I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
What's your biggest pet peeve?
People clipping their fingernails in public.
What's one thing you wish you knew at 19?
that I could be a leader.
What's your go-to power outfit?
A pink tracksuit.
What's something that always makes you laugh?
My kids.
What's always in your snack drawer?
Almonds.
Describe living in Canada in three words.
Diverse, inclusive, cold, weather-wise.
Well, thank you so much, Eva, for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time to sit with us and chat with us. I know our audience is going to be thrilled to hear your insights.
It's a pleasure.
It's been so great having you. Thank you for being here, Eva. It was amazing learning more about your business.
Thanks so much.
There are a few key moments that shaped Eva's journey, but one that stands out is the early realization that her first product, an online personal loan, wasn't working. For any entrepreneur, this kind of setback can be demoralizing. But instead of giving up, Eva and her team had to dig deep and figure out whether they had a product problem or a market problem or both. Through trial and adaptation and a commitment to solving financial barriers for Canadians, Borrowell pivoted, ultimately leading to its success today as one of Canada's largest fintech companies. But perhaps the most powerful takeaway from Eva's story is her perspective on resilience. She learned that there isn't one final moment where a business has made it. Instead, the challenges keep evolving, and success is about getting comfortable with that ongoing discomfort.
Eva was candid about the assumptions she faces as a woman in a leadership position. Fatima, did her experience resonate with you? And where's there room for improvement when it comes to perceptions about women in leadership?
No, it's really interesting that you bring this question up, because I do feel like we are held at the harshest standards, and they are completely different standards. And I think Eva shared a lot of this as well. I mean, I think that there's this connotation that women who choose to sort of put their career first or advance in their career in executive positions or even as founders have a really hard time balancing time with their family and children, and in general, likely must never see their family. It was just interesting when Eva was like, you know, frustrating that everyone just assumes that, when actually I made a lot of time for my family and lived a really balanced life. And I'm really starting to see that now as my husband and I are having our first baby in June, and the amount of people that have, you know, scoffed or made comments about the fact that I'm not planning on taking a mat leave, but my husband's taking 12 months, and the comments are usually, oh, wow, like, you know, are you going to be able to do that? That's crazy. But, you know, if it's the other way around, it's not crazy. And also just, you know, conversations around, you're so lucky to have such a great husband that's willing to do the 12 months. And, you know, the expectation that it has to be the birthing partner that is the one who needs to step away and step away from their career. So yeah, I think the society has really put together these defined gender norms. Jason, you mentioned the Canadian Business Innovation Awards at the beginning of this episode. Can you tell me more about the awards and why recognizing entrepreneurs is such an important mission for Canadian business?
Yeah, so I mean, every year, Canadian business just celebrates innovation of all types. So, you know, SME, sustainability, big business, small business, et cetera. So we try to figure out, what is innovation? What does it mean? What does it mean in this country? How do you have innovation that's sticky in an environment like this? And it's perfect because entrepreneurs just come to the table with just a lot of grit. Front lines, working on their businesses, doing tons of things all at the same time. And because they're so front lines, because they're building, innovation just comes out of that environment. And it's always like innovation at moments that you least suspect. So that's the reason why entrepreneurs do so incredibly well at the Innovation Awards. And prime example, Eva did fantastic at our previous iteration of the awards.
Thank you for listening to The Moment. We strive to bring you something different each week because we don't need another podcast with a bunch of finance bros sitting around their microphones talking about dropshipping. Just like the founders we interview each week, we're here for the real talk. Want more? There's an easy way to make sure you don't miss a new episode drop. Subscribe and follow wherever you find your podcasts.
But don't stop listening yet. Please rate the podcast, review the podcast. We'd love to get the word out. So please let us know what you think. And don't forget to share this episode so that we can learn more from these incredible entrepreneurs and their stories. And the moment everything changed.